Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
The Oracle Network.
Look deeper.
Well, hey there, friends. Welcome back. I'm your host, Melanie Peterson, and today we're going to dive into the case of Leonarda Cianciulli, the soap maker of Correggio, who is also considered Italy's first serial killer. Leonarda was a very superstitious woman. She believed that human sacrifices would protect her favorite son Giuseppe, who was enlisting in the Italian army to fight in World War II. Despite being thought of as a nice woman, a good mother, the kind of neighbor that everyone wants, a well-respected member of the community, Leonarda had a sinister side fueled by fears from a fortune teller who predicted her future earlier in her life. This fortune teller told Leonarda that she would get married and have children, but that all of her children would end up dying. So, to prevent her favorite son from perishing in the war, Leonarda decided to kill three of her neighbors who had come to her for help. And then to hide the bodies, she dismembered the bodies, boiled them down with caustic soda, and turned the remains into soap. She also collected the blood from her victims, dried it in the oven, and mixed it into her tea cake recipe to serve not only to anyone who visited her home, but she also ate the cakes and even gave some of them to her son Giuseppe. Buckle up, my friends. This one is going to be a bumpy ride. This is Mask of Sanity. Leonarda Cianciulli was born in Montella province of Avellino in Italy on April 14, 1893. Her mother Amelia had actually been raped by her father Mariano, and when Amelia discovered she was pregnant, she was forced to marry the man who assaulted her in order to save her reputation because, as we've seen time and again, it's rarely the rapist's reputation that's harmed. It's usually the victim who gets further victimized and judged by society as being damaged or ruined. And quite frankly, that needs to stop. We need to stop victim blaming rape victims. Nobody ever asks for that. And if that's what you believe, then shame on you. Once Amelia had the baby, unfortunately, it seems like Leonarda was basically just a constant reminder of the assault that her mother endured. So Amelia had a very difficult time being a loving mother. Instead, she was quite abusive to Leonarda, not necessarily physically, but definitely emotionally and mentally. And because of this abuse, Leonarda attempted suicide twice as a child. Even though Amelia would eventually divorce her attacker and marry another man, the emotional abuse continued. The emotional damage caused by her mother, who was also emotionally damaged from her assault and being forced to marry the man who attacked her, would have a long-lasting effect on Leonarda well into her early 20s. From an early age, Leonarda adopted a superstitious mindset. She visited a fortune teller who told her that although she would get married and have children, every single child would die. In 1917, Leonarda went against her parents' wishes and decided to marry Raphael Pensardi. Lansardi was older, he worked as a registry office clerk, he didn't make a ton of money, and he definitely was, quote, not one of the wealthy men her parents had selected for her, end quote. Leonardo believed her mother put a curse on her because of her disobedience, and that's something that both frightened and haunted her for years. Leonardo and her husband moved to Lariano in Alta Irpinia. They struggled in poverty, and again, because Raphael's income wasn't much, they couldn't really support the family very well once they began to have children. And because of this, Leonardo soon began working for herself. But in 1927, Leonardo actually went to prison for fraud when she was 33 years old. Soon after she got out, their home was completely destroyed, like so many others, in one of the most destructive earthquakes ever to hit Italy in 1930. This forced them to pick up and move again, this time settling in Correggio. It was around this time that she visited a gypsy for a palm reading who told her, quote, "In your right hand, I see prison. In your left, I see a criminal asylum," end quote. Whether or not you believe in fortune tellers and palm readings, this was a pretty spot-on reading. Over the years, Leonardo would get pregnant 17 times, 3 were lost to miscarriages, 10 of the children born would die before the age of 10 from a variety of illnesses, so Leonardo, in fear that the fortune teller from her youth was indeed correct, was extremely protective of her remaining 4 children. It was here in Correggio, in the Reggio Emilia province, that Leonardo decided to open up a small shop where she also ventured into fortune telling, as well as selling soaps and tea cakes. Leonardo, quote, was well liked and respected in Reggio Emilia. Sometimes an awful smell emulated from her kitchen, but it never lasted long. Her neighbors knew she was quite superstitious, but they told one another that this was due to her tragic history, end quote. In 1939, Italy was on the verge of entering into World War II under Benito Mussolini, so when Leonardo's favorite son, Giuseppe, was informed that he was being drafted into the Italian army, Leonardo panicked. She knew that her son would be in great danger, and fully believing in the prophecy that all of her children would die, she made the decision to protect him no matter what. She came to the conclusion that by offering God the body of another person, he would spare her son's life, so Leonardo actually began planning her first human sacrifice. Her first victim would be 73-year-old Faustina Setti. Setti had visited Leonardo several times. She was, quote, a poor, lonely, unmarried woman, desperate for a husband, end quote. So she came to Leonardo, asking her to help her find a husband, and Leonardo used this information to trick Faustina, telling her that she had found her a man to marry, but that he lived in Pola, which is now known as Croatia. Of course, Faustina was ecstatic at this news. She was finally going to be married, she was going to have her happily ever after, and she followed Leonardo's instructions to reply to her new suitor's letters. The letters were actually written by Leonardo to help convince Faustina of this imaginary man's existence. Leonardo also told Faustina to write letters to her family stating that she had moved to Pola and gotten married, and that she would send these letters after she arrived. Faustina was so happy that she was finally going to be married. She began making all these preparations. She packed her bags. She got herself done up. She dyed her hair. And then, as a final farewell, she went to visit Leonardo. And as part of the farewell toast, Leonardo offered Faustina some wine, which, unbeknownst to Faustina, had actually been laced with drugs. When Faustina passed out, Leonardo then took an axe and killed Faustina before hiding her body in a closet. Later that day, Leonardo, quote, chopped Faustina Setti into 9 parts using a basin to collect the blood, end quote. After Leonardo's arrest, she explained what she did with the body and blood of Faustina Setti. It's pretty gruesome, but I'm going to give you Leonardo's quote word for word. She said, "I threw the pieces into a pot, added 7 kilos of caustic soda, which I had bought to make soap, and stirred the whole mixture until the pieces dissolved in a thick, dark mush that I poured into several buckets and emptied in a nearby septic tank. As for the blood in the basin, I waited until it had coagulated, dried it in the oven, ground it, and mixed it with flour, sugar, chocolate, milk, and eggs, as well as a bit of margarine, kneading all of the ingredients together. I made lots of crunchy tea cakes and served them to the ladies who came to visit, though Giuseppe and I also ate some." And for the parts of the body that she boiled in a pot with the caustic soda, which is used to make soap, it's basically an industrial strength solvent, which is normally used to break down wood. But in this case, Leonardo used the caustic soda to help dissolve the bodies of her victims. And then she would take the melted fat from the body that was mixed with the soda and make soaps to sell in her shop. It's also rumored that Leonardo received all of Faustina's life savings. It was payment for her services. Despite feeling a little less worried about the fate of her son, Leonardo decided that perhaps one sacrifice wasn't enough to protect her eldest child, so she next targeted Francesca Suavi, a middle-aged woman who came to Leonardo for help in basically trying to find a better situation, find a better life, feel content with her life. So Leonardo fabricated a story for Francesca, telling her that she had found her a job at an all-girls school in Piacenza, which is in northern Italy. And just like with her first victim, Leonardo had Francesca write letters in advance to family and friends to send once she arrived in Piacenza. But she also instructed Francesca not to tell anyone that she was leaving. When Francesca stopped by Leonardo's shop to say farewell on September 5th, 1940, Leonardo drugged her with the wine and murdered her with the axe. She disposed of Francesca's body exactly like Faustina's, dismembering the body and melting it with caustic soda, using the dried blood in her tea cakes and selling them to customers. Even with 2 murders under her belt, Leonardo was still not entirely convinced that her son Giuseppe was safe, so she chose one more victim, Virginia Cacciapo. Virginia was a former opera singer and actually good friends with Leonardo, who, quote, "promised Virginia work as a secretary for an impresario in Florence," end quote. This news completely overjoyed Virginia, who hoped that this change in her life would get her out of poverty, introduce some new opportunities, and like her 2 previous victims, Leonardo instructed Virginia not to tell anyone where she was going, but Virginia was so excited about her new adventure that she just couldn't help herself, and she spilled the beans to a few of her friends that Leonardo had helped her find a job and give her a second chance at life. On September 30th, 1940, Leonardo welcomed Virginia into her home for a final farewell toast, and unfortunately, Virginia came to the same end as Faustina and Francesca. Leonardo later stated, quote, "She ended up in the pot like the other 2. Her flesh was fat and white. When it had melted, I added a bottle of cologne. And after a long time on the boil, I was able to make some most acceptable creamy soap. I gave bars to neighbors and acquaintances. The cakes, too, were better. That woman was really sweet," end quote. That whole quote just sends chills down my spine. The descriptions that she uses to describe the soap, the cakes, and what she did with it, it's so disgusting. In exchange for her services, Leonardo also collected money from her victims. Leonardo made out like a bandit and walked away with approximately 83,000 lire, which is about $4,200 in 1939 money. She got 50,000 from Virginia, 3,000 from Francesca, and the 30,000 from Faustina, which was her life savings. She also raided her house for valuables. She stole her jewelry. She took some clothes. She took some shoes. Some of these items she sold for money. Other pieces she gave to friends, which does seem a little crazy and perhaps careless to me, because wouldn't you think that someone would recognize really any of those items as being Virginia's? And if she had moved to Florence, why wouldn't she have taken her jewelry or other valuables with her? But it doesn't seem really like anyone was super concerned that these women were never heard from again. This wasn't a big town, and for three women to basically disappear into thin air over a matter of a year, and it really seemed like Leonarda was in the clear, she wasn't suspected. That is until Virginia's sister-in-law became concerned and was very suspicious of her disappearance. She knew that Virginia's last stop before leaving town was at Leonarda's, so she went to the police and explained her concerns. The police went to see Leonarda, and when she denied having anything to do with it, the police actually ended up arresting her son, Giuseppe, believing that he was responsible for Virginia's disappearance. But this terrified Leonarda. She always went above and beyond for her children, to the extreme, as we've seen with these human sacrifices, and she could not let her son take the punishment for her. He was innocent, and she couldn't stomach the idea of him spending his life in prison. So Leonarda confessed to all three murders and was immediately arrested. Although it's said that she showed little to no remorse for what she had done, she was more concerned about her son going away to prison than the fact that she had murdered three women. During her trial in 1946, she sat there pretty emotionless, very matter-of-fact. She made sure that everybody got the facts straight, and she even went so far as to interrupt the prosecution at one point to explain what she did with some of the items that she used when she would basically cook down the bodies. She said, quote, "I gave the copper ladle, which I used to skim the fat off the kettles, to my country, which was so badly in need of metal during the last days of the war," end quote. During her time prior to and during the trial, Leonarda also wrote a book. She wrote her memoirs, actually, called An Embittered Soul's Confessions, where she shared recipes as well as the best ways to turn human body parts into soap. And that just completely disgusts me, and I'm shocked that the book was even published.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Each day during the trial, people would line up outside the courthouse. They were hoping to get a seat inside so that they could witness firsthand the nightmare that was Leonarda Cianciulli. At one point, the prosecution, police, even the judge had a hard time believing that Leonarda could dismember a body as efficiently as she claimed without assistance. So, quote, "The attorneys, judges, and police took Leonarda to the morgue. She demonstrated her talent by dissecting a corpse into 9 pieces under 12 minutes," end quote. Leonarda Cianciulli would be found guilty of all three murders and given a 30-year prison sentence, as well as a 3-year sentence in a criminal asylum. Her son Giuseppe also went to trial, but he was found innocent despite having allegedly mailed the cards and letters from her victims and disposed of some of the bones by tossing them into a river. Leonarda spent the next 24 years isolated from society, never apologizing for her crimes and speaking about what she had done completely devoid of emotion. She didn't have any remorse for what she had done. Leonardo died on October 15, 1970 at the age of 76 from cerebral apoplexy, which is pretty much a stroke. And this is while she was serving her 3-year sentence at the Women's Criminal Asylum. When her neighbors discovered what Leonardo had done, they were completely beside themselves. How could this well-liked, respected, friendly woman, who was thought of as a leader in the community, a woman who very much loved her children and seemed willing to help whoever she could, how could this woman have done something so awful? It's suspected by many who have researched and looked into Leonardo's background that losing 13 of her children made her extremely paranoid, and therefore much more likely to believe that killing one of her neighbors, or three, in the name of human sacrifice would actually help to protect her remaining 4 children. She had a horrible childhood, she was treated badly by her mother, she grew up poor, and she was deeply superstitious, believing not only that she was cursed by her mother, but also that the predictions from her fortune-telling and palm readings drove the outcome of her future. She basically thought she had no control over her future, that what she had done in the past, her fortune-tellings, the palm readings, that was what was going to control her life. And if you are superstitious and paranoid enough to believe that that's reality, that is a very terrifying existence. And as sheer luck would have it, the palm reader who said she saw prison and a criminal asylum in her reading was actually 100% correct in her prediction of Leonardo's future. All of this combined into an understanding that she had to go to the extreme in order to protect her family after suffering 3 miscarriages and the deaths of 10 children. I suppose one can look at it from the perspective that she did everything that she did out of love, but that doesn't change the fact that she brutally murdered 3 women as human sacrifices, but then also went on to make soap and tea cakes out of the remains in order to hide the evidence. It's also interesting that Leonardo resorted to human sacrifices, since Italy is very well known as being a Catholic country, and especially at that time, so human sacrifices would have been against the religion's practices. It's more than likely that if she were alive today, Leonardo would, quote, most likely be diagnosed with clinical depression, sent to undergo therapy, and put on a regimen of medication, end quote. By trying to make sense out of tragedy after tragedy, Leonardo resorted to superstitions and unfounded predictions to give a reason for why she had been struck with so many unfortunate losses. After her arrest, several items that she used in the murders, including the pot that she boiled her victims in, were taken and displayed in Rome's Criminological Museum. All right, friends, I hope you enjoyed that episode about Leonardo Cianciulli. Thank you, as always, to my listeners who have offered suggestions. This was actually a listener suggestion, so I appreciate that. I had never heard of her. I didn't know she was considered Italy's first serial killer. As a reminder, you can always reach out to me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook to make suggestions, if you have feedback, anything like that. My inboxes are always open for you. And please make sure that, along with any of the Mask of Sanity social media, please follow the Oracle Network as well. It's the network that I run with Melissa Lee from Victimology, and we're very excited about it and the future of it. We're working very hard to figure out new ways to promote the network, promote the shows in the network, and we just have a lot of great podcasts that are part of the Oracle Network. They're fun, they make you think, they're kind of crazy. Some of them are funny. We have a couple of comedy podcasts, there's paranormal, true crime, beer, there's a whole mix of shows. And also, very exciting, I have now a Patreon, a merch store, and a Ko-fi account. So there are tons of ways to support Mask of Sanity if you're so inclined. It doesn't necessarily have to be financial. Any support that you give to the show is always noticed and so appreciated. And I love my listeners so much, really. You guys are the ones that keep me doing this week after week, and you make it worth doing. I'm so grateful for your support. And I'm always just excited to see how you react to the new cases that I bring every week. And it's definitely been my main source of pride throughout the last 6 months. And with that said, I have a lot of amazing listeners, and what I'm about to go into is not at all directed at any of you. I appreciate you all so much, but I do have to speak my piece a little bit about what most podcasters, including myself, do and why we do it. We do what we do because we enjoy it. And unfortunately, the fact that we put a lot of time and effort into each episode to give our listeners what's basically free entertainment, it does have a tendency to leave us open to criticism that is not constructive, and at times it can be very personal and negative. And while constructive criticism is always welcome, like I said, my inboxes are always welcome. If you have a concern about the show, or if there's something technical that maybe you had a question about, I am more than open to talking about that with you, because I know that you would approach me with respect and not necessarily in an attacking way. However, not everybody I know who listens to podcasts are as wonderful as all my listeners. And while constructive criticism is always welcome, bashing a show because what the host does doesn't necessarily align with your personal preferences is never okay. The past few weeks, I have seen some pretty horrific and just plain mean reviews left on several podcasts that I know the hosts of. And the sad thing about a lot of these negative reviews is that it basically comes down to the listener's own preference, which is fine. We all have different likes and dislikes, but I do feel like some people who listen to podcasts think that they can speak a certain way about the host because there really are no consequences for them. We can only see the reviews. We don't know who is actually writing them unless you put your name on it. We can't respond to them. We can't respond to a grievance or a complaint, nothing. And while I do understand that putting your work out to the public for them to listen to, it does come with the understanding that not everyone's going to like it. I understand that. But what I don't understand is tearing someone down publicly without giving them the opportunity to respond. And the great thing is there are lots of true crime podcasts out there. I try to recommend at least one in every episode, and there are so many great ones out there, so many hardworking people out there who are doing the best that they know how to do in creating good shows, good quality shows for you. So, and not every show is going to be your cup of tea. So if you find one that doesn't work for you, the great thing is you can just stop listening and find another one. And like I said, I'd love to encourage anyone who has feedback about my show to message me personally. Allow me the opportunity to have a conversation with you. And as long as it's civil and we conduct ourselves as adults, I'm sure it'll be great. I would love to listen and take your feedback into consideration. This is a very challenging medium to present your work in. An indie podcaster spends hours and hours researching, writing, recording, editing, marketing, strategizing, planning, doing all of this while working other jobs. We don't really get paid for podcasting, and whatever if any income does come in, whether it's from the ads that we play in our shows or Patreon or merch sales, anything like that, it's minimal compared to the time that goes into each episode. So I guess all I'm trying to say is that if you like a show, let that show know it. Let them know what you love about their show. Leave a review telling them what you like. Send them a message on social media. Tell others about their show. If you have something constructive to suggest, then by all means, feel free to do so. But keep in mind that when you're critiquing someone's work, do it in a way that you would want someone to critique your work. And if how you're approaching it would offend you as the receiver, then perhaps change your wording. If you feel the need to leave a review because the host does something you don't care for, or you don't like the way they sound, or you tell them that the only way you'll continue to listen to their show is if they change their music or their voice, then I'd ask you to stop and consider what you're asking, because I can tell you right now that telling someone to change their show specifically for you, it's not going to happen. So I apologize that I had to go into that, but I did have to speak my piece, and I know that my listeners are wonderful people, and they're not going to go around leaving the kind of reviews that I've seen over the last few weeks, but I also feel like it's part of the industry that maybe people are not aware of, so I wanted to help make everyone aware of it. So if you see things like this, if you see people attacking shows, attacking the host personally, then I'd encourage you, if you're comfortable, to step in and try to stop it. And speaking of shows that you should absolutely leave a glowing review for, please stick around after the show for the promo trailer for the podcast, Leave the Lights On. Eliza does a fantastic job covering lots of unusual cases, and she also does spooky paranormal stuff. So if you're looking for a good podcast to get into now that it's starting to get cooler, October is right around the corner, and you just want some good spooky paranormal stuff, I know you'll love her show as much as I do, so please give it a listen. As always, my resources are linked in the episode notes. Thank you all so much for listening, and please join me next week when I cover one of South Africa's worst serial killers, Moses Sithole, the ABC killer. Until next time, stay safe, friends. Mask of Sanity is partnered with the Oracle Network.
Leave the Lights On is a true crime podcast with a paranormal twist. Join creator Eliza and her co-host as they explore terrifying true stories and chilling crimes. Growing up, Eliza had an odd obsession with the darkest desires of humanity and an insatiable curiosity about the afterlife. Now, each week, Eliza brings you tales that will make you want to lock your doors, hide in your room, and of course, leave the lights on. Available on Spotify and Apple Podcast.